Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Matt Hansen.
And I'm Tristan Riddell.
And you're listening to the Nerd Party.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to the Nerd Party. This is episode 26. Thank you so much for downloading. Thank you for subscribing. We're getting more emails. We're getting more reviews. We're getting more interaction. And we just want to thank you so much for all of your input. A few of you gave us your best of Pixar lists. And that was a lot of fun reading those. There was kind of a theme going around. I mean, a lot of people had the same kind of list that we did. And I think the reason why is because we chose the best ones.
Well, I mean, subjectively speaking.
Well, I mean, it's all subjective, but I think it is a common opinion that Toy Story 1 and Toy Story 3 are definitely some of the best out of all of Pixar.
Yeah, that is pretty much a agreed upon opinion. Though I do think that perhaps there may be a new entry in people's top fives after this past weekend.
Now, that's right. I want to talk about that. Like, today, we have a different subject. We're talking about merchandise and toys of our own childhoods and how that changed from then to now and our perspective of it. But last week we talked about our top five Pixar films in honor of Inside Out coming out, and you saw it over the weekend, so please give us your spoiler free review.
I've actually seen it twice. I went opening weekend and I just went yesterday with a friend for their birthday, and I have to say, without giving too much away, it is the best Pixar film since Toy Story 3.
Holy crap.
It really was. I was like, I expected to like it because I've yet to walk away from a Pixar film that I've seen personally. Now, I haven't seen Cars, remember?
Yeah.
But I've yet to walk away from a Pixar film and actually dislike it. So I knew I thought I was going to like it. I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. And I think that I'm going to have to sit on it for a while, but I think it might be in the top five for me now. I don't know what it would replace, but it's really that good, and it's that touching. And I also think, surprisingly, now I think kids will have a good time with this movie, don't get me wrong,
okay,
but I think that this movie is going to appeal even more to adults than it would to kids, because you're dealing with very, very complex thoughts about emotion and growing up and how you need certain emotions to feel joy. And you know, the two main characters, you're introduced to, how many are there? 1, 2, 3. I think there's 5 distinct emotional characters that you're introduced to. And for the majority of the movie, you're dealing with Joy, played by Amy Poehler, and Sadness, who is played by someone off The Office, I think, who I can't really remember.
Phyllis Smith, who played Phyllis in The Office.
Right. Okay. So you're dealing with those two characters, Joy and Sadness, for a majority of this film. And really, you come to I don't think this is a spoiler, but it is kind of the main theme of the movie, is that, you know, you need sadness in order to... Sadness is an essential emotion, too.
Mm-hmm.
And you need it for joy and all that sort of stuff. And I don't want to give say too much more, because I think it would be giving too much away. But it's really, really, like, it hits to the emotional center of people. And I think people who have the, you know, cognitive ability to grasp all these underlying messages, you know, a.k.a. the adults, are going to really take to this movie. I really, really loved it. If we were doing out of 5, I would give it a 5.
That's so fantastic. That's so nice to hear, because, I mean, the past couple of Pixar films that I've seen, I mean, they haven't been bad. I mean, they haven't been horrible at all, like we talked about earlier. But, I mean, even with some of the trailers for Inside Out and for some of the past trailers, like from Brave and other things like that, I just kind of like, eh. You know, like, it didn't really seem like it appealed to me. But it's so nice to hear you say that. I thoroughly trust your opinion.
It appeals to human beings. Let's just say that. You know what I mean? It just everybody. Like, I know of your penchant for disliking good things, but seriously, I'm not, in all seriousness, if you watch this movie and you come away feeling nothing or not being so hot in it, I truly will be surprised.
Well, okay, so here's the thing, and I know this is a touchy subject for a lot of people, but this seems to be a recurring theme in a lot of our podcasts, because this is a recurring theme in popular culture right now. When these trailers were released for Inside Out, there seemed to be the question of feminism. Are we getting some gender stereotypes here, with the dad only liking sports and not paying attention, and the the mom only being flowery and only care is the only one that cares about the child and everything like that. Like, was the trailer just a misconception? Did we get that in the movie?
I mean, you get some of that in the movie, but here's the thing. It's a more family oriented film. And these are archetypes that people understand. You have to play to these archetypes when you're dealing with members who have a younger, you know, younger audience members. Now, I'm not saying that that's exclusively who the movie's for. I just got through saying I think adults will enjoy this more than kids. But these are easily identifiable people that you can understand and you know, get along with. But the stereotypes are not played up. In fact, both parents are very sympathetic, and they don't play to just female and male stereotypes. You see both of them taking a vested interest in their daughter. And I don't think there was one character I disliked in the movie or I thought was done poorly.
Good. Well, that's good to hear. Yeah, it's interesting when you see that, and it's also very, very easy to jump on a bandwagon when you see a 30-second piece of footage.
And like I said, we're dealing with a Pixar movie, and we're dealing with it. It's a family film, and I know the tendency to this day and age for culture is to be so exactingly politically correct that we can't reinforce any stereotype, or we can't do this, or we can't do that. Just relax and enjoy it. As long as it's a good story, it really doesn't matter what's on screen, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm glad that you said that, and you know how I feel as well, because growing up, my dad loves sports, loves working on cars. My mom loves working in her garden, loves arts and crafts and everything like that. And so, like, I was raised around that. And so when I see these representation in TV and film, I'm just kind of like, okay, yeah, I get it. But then when I see non-gender stereotypes, I'm like, okay, cool. You know, like, the thing is that you can't have non-gender stereotypes in every single film from here on out.
You know, people get upset where, like, the female character is, you know, talks about family or talks about another man in their lives, and, oh, this fails the Bechdel test or whatever it's called. And I'm like, just because it doesn't conform to, like, just because it's not supremely forward thinking doesn't mean that these people don't exist in real life. They do.
Right.
So why do we have to pretend that they don't in all these movies?
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, and I'm glad that it's good. And I mean, I'm a huge, huge Amy Poehler fan.
She's great. There's no one more perfect for Joy than Amy Poehler was. She nailed it.
I mean, when she was the computer voice in Monsters and Aliens, or was it Monsters versus Aliens, I think, or something like that. And I was like, she had such a bit role doing that voiceover work, and all I wanted her to do was star in an animated feature, and so I'm so glad that this is happening.
Yeah, I'm happy to report then that she knocks out of the park, as do every single voice actor. And again, these are not names that roll off the tongue for you. Like, besides Amy Poehler, like, there's a couple of other recognizable names, but not unless you watch a lot of TV. But, you know, just because they didn't get stars, everyone was casted perfectly.
All right. Well, one other thing that we need to talk about is one other thing that's of recent news. And unless you've lived underneath a rock, you haven't heard about this, but we have a new Spider-Man. We have a new Peter Parker who is going to move forward in the Marvel Cinematic Universe version of Spider-Man, which I think all of us are really looking forward to. I don't think I've heard one person say, oh, Marvel shouldn't have Spider-Man, you know?
I haven't heard a person say Marvel shouldn't have Spider-Man. I have heard a bunch of people complaining about how this is another Peter Parker, and sorry to touch on this subject, but another white Peter Parker.
Yeah.
So much complaining that it's another white kid, and I'm just like, what would have – and I would have been fine casting a minority Peter Parker. I wouldn't have, like, been up in arms. I'm fine with the new – we've talked about this before. I'm fine with the new Human Torch and the new Fantastic Four movie being African American. Mm-hmm. That's perfectly cool. But, you know, there comes a point where you do have to ask yourself, are we doing this because it's going to fit the story, or are we doing this because we demand diversity in every single film?
Well, I think we should definitely have diversity in film.
I
but
agree
it doesn't
too,
mean that
but you know, does everything have to hinge on it?
Yeah, I think, yes, that's a solid point. And we talked about this before, and It is kind of strange that a lot of people were complaining about, oh, we're getting another white Spider-Man. I was like, well, in modern times we had two. You know, like it's kind of strange that this is what we're hinging on. Like, this is the role that we're hinging on, where, like, in the comic books, the guy was white, and in the past couple of films he's been white.
And why is it now? I mean, like, what, how come we've had, you know, with Ben Affleck, is it like it's five white Batman?
Yeah, no one is saying that about Batman. No one's saying, oh, we're getting another white Batman. And I'm all for diversity in comics. I'm all for diversity in comic book movies and in movies in general. And I think we should have minority-led movies and comic movies and comic book entities.
And they are coming. I mean, Black Panther is getting made. You know, Cyborg is getting made.
And it's thoroughly exciting, and I'm so happy about it, but I'm just really confused why all of our energy as a geek culture seems to be focused on Spider-Man being white. Doesn't that seem weird?
Yeah,
Is it because we have Morales, the half-black, half-Latino character of Spider-Man out there?
Well, you would know this more than I do, knowing the lore. Do we have anyone who is a minority Batman besides Bruce Wayne?
Not that I know of. Like, we have had other people play Batman. We have had other people take up the mantle, so to speak, of Batman who weren't Bruce Wayne. To my recollection, they've all been white. But we do have a comic book called Batwing, and he is an African. Mm-hmm. If memory serves, I don't read the comic book. He's an African who isn't Batman, but he's a part of the Bat family, and. And that's the thing, is that I think a lot of people who are saying this, talking about like wanting Miles Morales as Spider-Man, I think that would have been cool. I think it would have been awesome. But the thing is, though, is that people who are hardcore Peter Parker fans were more about Peter being in the, like, keeping Peter Parker as in than keeping Peter white, because there's decades and decades of Peter Parker stories that are so much greater than what we've seen on film. And Miles Morales is just a couple years old. And so people were saying, like, let's not ditch decades of great stories for, like, one or two great stories from Miles Morales.
And plus, this is going to be the first meeting, because we haven't had this yet. This will be new. This will be the first meeting of Spider-Man and the Avengers on the big screen. What I'm trying to say is, because Peter Parker is the icon, I mean, he's the one we're going to think of when someone says Spider-Man. Mm. We want to see Peter Parker being the first one to meet the Avengers.
Right, right.
But here's the thing. There's nothing that says that if this new Spider-Man is successful, that we can't see a Miles Morales Spider-Man later down the line when Tom Holland doesn't want to do any more movies. That's not to say – and also, too, when Chris Evans doesn't want to be Captain America anymore, maybe we'll get to see Anthony Mackie, because Falcon is Captain America in the comics now.
Yeah, they just came out with a new Avengers, and he is Captain America, and his outfit looks badass. And I think this is a great evolution, and I think this is how we should handle it. And I think it would be great to see that moving forward, where and like you said, Captain America is a great example, because you could have Anthony Mackie, and you could also have Sebastian Stan. You could have so many different people take up the mantle instead of just recasting like Bond.
You have to think that's what they're thinking of, because, you know, we don't know where this is going to go post Avengers Infinity War 2.
Right.
You know, contracts will be ending, and, you know, people may either not want to continue, or they'll demand too much money. And, mm-hmm. you know, you have all these supporting people that have already been signed to, like, multi-picture deals that they can then promote.
Right, right. And, you know, and it's going to be interesting. It's going to be great. And I think we're going to see more and more diversity. And I think we're going to see a little bit more characters kind of get maybe some gender swap, or get some, you know, get some alternate race in there. And I think that's good. I think that's fine. But I don't know why we're focusing all our energy on Spider-Man right now. And I have no idea why there's just this collective sigh of, oh, another white guy. Like, it's unexpected, or it's, I'm just so confused. Like, if he is the yardstick by that logic, then the next Iron Man movie, he shouldn't be white.
Well, I mean, where was the, if this, what I'm saying is, why Fuhrer now? Why wasn't there Fuhrer two or three years ago that, you know, Superman was again going to be a white Clark Kent and not Steel? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Even just staying within the Spider-Man universe, like, why is it now? Like, when we were casting Andrew Garfield, why weren't people going, oh, another one? Like, I'm sure there were some people out there who were, but it seems like it's just, like, I think what happened was, is that, like, one person said, oh, wouldn't Miles Morales be cool? And then everybody just kind of jumped on it saying, oh, this is what should happen. And if they don't do it, then they're doing it wrong.
Right.
Which seems to be a very current in the geek culture. Kind of like with Idris Elba, like, being Bond.
Right.
Like, people are saying, like, he should be the next Bond because, and this, people don't understand this, is that that whole rumor started just because one interviewer was talking with Idris Elba and said, would you ever want to be James Bond? And then he said, and then he makes a joke. He's like, James Bond's supposed to be handsome. And he was just having self-deprecating humor. Ever since then, the internet exploded and all of these fake headlines came around that ended with a question mark saying, Idris Elba, the next Bond?
Yeah, you just have to be careful with what you say. And, who, you know, you also have to consider the source because, I mean, a couple weeks ago it was, I don't know if you saw this, but a couple weeks ago, Asa Butterfield was almost, if you looked at certain news outlets, he was confirmed to be cast as Spider-Man.
Right.
And, you know, for me, it's like, unless it comes from, like, certain publications, either from, like, Hollywood Reporter or Variety or from Marvel themselves, I don't believe it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And the only reason we all confirmed it is because the news came out from Marvel itself when Tom Holland was cast.
Right, and we actually haven't mentioned that yet, but Tom, yeah, like, this whole story was, the only reason why we're talking about this is because they finally cast the new Spider-Man, and it's Tom Holland. I know nothing of his work, and he is a very young person. He's 19. He was born in 1996.
I know. Isn't that a little frightening?
Oh, that's so frightening. And
but, you know, it kind of makes sense because from what I hear from what Kevin Feige has said, they wanted to focus more on Spider-Man during his high school years than either Tobey Maguire or Andrew Garfield did. And it makes sense if you're going to do some Spider-Man in high school, hire someone who looks like a teenager.
Yeah, I mean, and who is a teenager. And it's, yeah, it's interesting because I was having a discussion online and about this, about how I think it's odd that we're getting a standalone film so soon because I would have liked to have first seen, like, here's the thing. I know that he's going to appear in Captain America Civil War, and that's going to be his first appearance in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I can't imagine that's anything more than just a cameo. Am I wrong?
No, from what I hear, it's going to be, I don't know if it's going to be somewhere in between cameo and small supporting role.
And here's the thing is that, like, when I first see him, I don't know, like, I want to see him meet the Avengers and fight with the Avengers and then have a standalone film. I don't want to see a standalone film and then have him fight with the Avengers. And so, I mean, maybe we'll get that in Civil War, but I severely doubt it.
Well, we don't know what capacity he's being used in Civil War. Like, it might be a small supporting role, but who's to say that that's going to be all talking and no fighting?
That's true. Like, he may show up at the last second saying, like, oh, we heard that there was this kid in New York. Maybe he can help us out. And then, bam, he hits for the final battle.
This is a rumor that I can neither confirm nor deny, and it might be a spoiler if it's true. But there may be an upcoming, not appearance, but reference to, like, maybe one of the post-credit things in Ant-Man regarding Spider-Man.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
So I think they're starting to, I think the pieces are already in motion. Obviously, he's been cast and it's set for 2017, so which means that production is going to start sometime next year.
I don't know. I just feel like we should have gotten a standalone later on, but I guess they want to strike while the iron is hot.
Well, here's the thing. I can't imagine that, and this is just pure speculation, but I can't imagine that they're going to have him in Captain America Civil War and then not give him any action. We may see an action sequence with him in it. So that we can see what he can do. And then we'll get it, the standalone. And then I think it's a foregone conclusion, although, again, it's pure speculation at this point, that he's going to be in either one or both Infinity War movies.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think that's pretty solid that he can be inserted in whatever planning they have already done for it.
And, you know, vice versa, there's a possibility that some of the Marvel guys, the Avengers, could show up in the standalone.
That's interesting. I haven't thought of that. That's That's weird that I haven't thought of that. That's a solid thing because we're getting almost everybody in the Captain America's movie.
And I did confirm that according to Kevin Feige, it goes both ways. Spider-Man can appear in Avengers films, and Avengers actors can appear in Spider-Man films.
Good. Well, I am thoroughly excited for Civil War. I think I'm more excited for Civil War than I have been for pretty much any Marvel movie.
Yeah, even when I was at the height of my Age of Ultron fear, I was even more excited for Civil War than Age of Ultron.
Same here. Oh, I totally had a dream last night. I'm not even making this up, where I was in Captain America Civil War. I was an actor.
An extra? Okay. Or
No. I played a Tony Stark's dad. But like a younger version,
the Dominic Cooper version.
Yeah, like the Dominic Cooper version. Like, and I like for some reason he wasn't available, and so they asked me, which is weird because I look nothing like Dominic.
You look totally alike.
Yeah, and I show up and like I'm in costume and I show up on set and it's like an old New York set and Chris Evans is there. And he's in full costume, but he's like shaking hands and kissing babies with all the extras and like all the people who are helping out and volunteering and everything like that. He's just like the super nice guy. And like he's handing something out and I go up and I go, I'm going to introduce myself to say like, hey, I'm going to be working with you. And he shakes my hand and like gives me like a Captain America pin saying like, hey, thanks for stopping by. Have a good day. You know, and I'm just like, no, I don't want an autograph. I'm actually going to work with you. And he was... We went and he showed me around the set and we had a nice time. And I think he actually saved somebody, like in real life. Like not Captain America, Chris Evans.
Like something went wrong on the set and he just saved somebody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, something went wrong in the set and he went and saved somebody. And I was just in awe. And then I woke up and I was just like, oh, Matt would love this dream.
Yeah. Well, I have dreams about Chris Evans too, but they're not fit for this podcast.
No, yeah, they're not fit for this podcast, nor my ears.
Right.
But before we go into our topic, so we talked about that. We talked about Inside Out. We talked about Spider-Man. And I know we're delaying our topic a great deal this week, but I need to talk about The Martian.
Yes, you do, because I saw that trailer when I went to go see Jurassic World.
The Martian looks amazing. I'm a big Ridley Scott fan. I'm a big Matt Damon fan. And I'm a big hardcore science and film fan, and the problem is that I haven't seen a good Ridley Scott film since 2007, and I used to work for the man. I love his movies, and
you used to work for Ridley Scott?
Oh, I have talked about this on the podcast. I'm sure people who are listening are just like, oh, please shut up, don't talk
You've never talked about it with me.
One of my first jobs out of college was at Ridley Scott Associates, his production company. He owns Ridley Scott Associates and he owns Scott Films.
Right.
And I worked at RSA and I was their assistant vault manager there. So like I cut director's reels together and would ship them out to different production companies when they wanted to work with people that we represented and things of that nature. So yeah, that was my job. It was cool.
That is awesome.
It was in Hollywood. Yeah, it's when I lived in Hollywood, but I hated Hollywood and so I moved back.
Quick question regarding the Martian coming up, because I saw the trailer and I was definitely interested, but I'm like, did the casting sessions happen during the shooting of Interstellar?
There's two people. Okay, there are some similarities between Interstellar and that, because here's the thing, in Interstellar, Matt Damon plays a character who is marooned, not like voluntarily, in Interstellar he's voluntarily marooned on a planet, and in The Martian he's involuntarily marooned on the planet. And that's where the similarities begin and end. So it and Jessica Chastain's in it.
Jessica Chastain. I was like, I know it's very surface level similarities, but given that the tone of the movies looks similar, it's hard science fiction. It's again Matt Damon and Jessica Chastain. I'm like, didn't I see this movie last year?
Yeah, a lot of people are saying that, and even the outfits are kind of similar. But the reason why I bring it up is because when I saw that this was based off of a novel, and that the novel got such great reviews, it's a novel by Andy Weir, my wife and I started reading it, and it is phenomenal.
Is it good?
It is a great, great book. I mean, I haven't enjoyed reading a novel like that in years. It's been the most enjoyable that I've read for a long time. And I've read a lot of great books that I have enjoyed, but this one, I was giddy when I was reading it. I couldn't wait to get back home so I could read it. I was laughing out loud. But it's also the most technical book that I've ever read. It is hard science. hard science with a lot of numbers, a lot of explanation. And but the thing is, the reason why it works is because the lead character, who is going to be played by Matt Damon in the film, is very charismatic, very sarcastic, and very funny, very likable. He makes the science digestible and interesting.
Actually, that sounds a lot like you haven't read it yet, obviously, but it sounds a lot like Jurassic Park, the novel, because that is very also the novel is very, very technical. And yet there are likable leads that actually explain the hard science to you.
I definitely recommend people read it. And also the audiobook is amazing as well. It's I am very much looking forward to it. And also because of it, my wife and I, we said we're like, once we finished the novel, we're like, let's do a hard science marathon. So we're watching Interstellar today, Contact, and Gattaca.
The fact that there's an audiobook, you've convinced me. I mean, that's the only reason. That's the only way I can really read things these days. So I will download it before the movie comes out.
It's definitely worth your time. All right. Well, it's been about 30 minutes on preliminary topics. We should probably get into this, huh?
Yeah, we should.
This is going to be, this is going to be a sort subject matter where most of it was, most of our podcast is our intro topics, but that's the beauty of it when so much is going on in the geek world.
Yep, I agree.
It's funny because like when our episodes are super long and it's just the topic and no preliminary discussions, means it's all quiet on the Western Front when it comes to geekdom.
Right. And
when we have a short topic that's like 15 minutes towards the end of the podcast, that means there's too much going on.
Exactly. But let's get into it. Why don't you tell them what we're talking about today, Tristan?
Well, what we're talking about, I touched on it a little bit earlier, is toys growing up. I mean, we as geeks love our toys. Whether we're adults or when we were kids, there is something about toys that we took to the next level. And that's the thing, is that like every kid had toys. Every kid had a collection of playthings that represented like a TV show they were into, or a movie they were into, or a subject matter they were into, whether it's space or dinosaurs or something like that. But the thing is, like, a lot of us, and if you're listening to us, there's a higher chance that you're like this than not, continues to buy toys. I mean, like right now, I'm staring at my desk and I have two toy starships that are staring right back at me, and I am in my late 20s. You know, what's the reasoning behind that? Why can a grown man buy a toy and be okay?
I wish I had an answer for you, because it puzzles me myself. And you know, as we're sitting here, I'm looking over to the side. I've got my Star Trek J.J. Abrams phaser replica sitting right here, mm-hmm. on my desk. And even though I try to use fancy, it's a replica. It's a toy.
It's a toy. And that's the thing, like, because like I have some on my desk, you have some at your desk, at my desk at work. Okay, like I have Bender from Futurama. I have several Batmans. I have a couple of dinosaurs. I have a Tribble, and I have Species 8472, as well as Tosk from Deep Space Nine.
See, I don't have any figurines on my desk. I do have a bunch of printed out movie posters around my office that I put up, all my geek stuff. But I to answer your question, I wish I had an answer for you, because it seems to me like years and years ago, there was this pressure, and there still kind of is, honestly. There's this pressure that when you hit your mid-20s, or when you hit your 20s period, that you're supposed to let go of childhood things and actually focus on quote-unquote growing up and adult tasks and whatever. Mm-hmm. But and some people view this as a very negative thing, but this has seemed to soften in the internet age, and as millennials grow into their 20s, of, you know, you can still be an adult and take care of business when you need to, but that doesn't mean you have to absolutely let go of everything that you grew up with.
Right.
And you know what? I kind of appreciate that. And like I said, I know there's a lot of criticism surrounding it. I mean, from geeks even, which I don't understand. And I don't want to go too negative on this, but I wanted to bring this up because this is something that did bother me a few weeks ago. Simon Pegg is someone who I love and respect. I've seen all of his movies. I watched him in Star Trek. I love him in Star Trek. Did you read the article that was published a few weeks ago where he talked about the infantilization of geek culture?
I did, but I'm having a hard time remembering it. I remember reading it and going, really? Like, this is what's happening?
No, but the thing is that he was complaining that, you know, stuff like superhero movies were keeping our culture too childlike. It was you know, we were playing too much to our childhood selves or something to that effect. And first of all, like, dude, you say this and yet you're writing a major Hollywood blockbuster next year that's based on a lot of people's childhood fantasies.
And also is coming in, like, has made a lot of money off of the Mission Impossible franchise.
And not to mention, we could also fit, you know, Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead and World's End into that category too. All stuff that he wrote.
Now, didn't he write a retraction some fashion?
He did, but you know, it was the his point seemed to still stand. It was my issue. And I'm kind of like, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't say this and then be writing Star Trek 3.
Right.
And I just think criticism like that, quite frankly, is ridiculous because, you know, why does my having toys or me enjoying superhero movies, how does that prevent me from being an adult or growing up in the culture?
Yeah, see, that's the thing is that I'm interested in that perspective because I love... I think what happened is that, and this may just be the language, and like some people might call BS and say like, oh, it's the same thing. But when I was a kid, I loved playing with toys, and I loved having toys. As an adult, I love collectibles. You know what I mean?
But they're still toys, and they're like, I'd be lying. I mean, usually, like I said, this JJ phase, where I just have it on my desk just to look at. But mm-hmm. I'd be lying if I said there wasn't times that I picked it up and pretended to fire with it.
Okay, see, that's the thing, is that when does that shift happen? When is it where we go from active toys to primarily ornamentation?
I think it must happen somewhere around high school because, like, it's at that point where you don't want to call it, you know, toys. You want to call them collectible action figures. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally played into that trope growing up where people would say like, oh, he has toys on his desk or like he loves collecting toys. I was like, no, action figures.
To maintain your manliness and masculinity.
Exactly, because I just have so much masculinity oozing out of my
you
ears.
You radiate it. But I think it happens when we have this desire to fit in, especially in high school years. We want to be part of the cool gang, even though mm-hmm. you and I are straight up nerds. We want to have this positive outlook that we project to other people. So we want to like distance ourselves from anything that could be associated with childhood or infantilization. Mm-hmm. And so I think it happened, that paradigm shift happens in high school, early college years. But now, you know, I'm post college. I have a steady job. I have friends. I'm very successful. And I've reached the point where like I just don't give a damn anymore. Like mm-hmm. They're mm-hmm. toys or they're collectibles or they're whatever. And you know, if you don't like it, you don't have to associate with me.
See, okay, that's the key thing right there. I like that you said that, and I like that it's kind of a no BS standpoint where I am who I am, and if you can't deal with that, then I don't want to deal with you. I like that because it's true. It's like people, even I cast judgment where like I'll be scrolling online, I'll be on Tumblr or Instagram or Twitter or something like that, and I'll see just people pouring massive amounts of money into a specific hobby, and it's a hobby that I don't understand. And I just kind of roll my eyes and go like, oh my God, come on, man, you're in your 30s, you're in your 40s, you're in your 20s, whatever, get over it. And then I start thinking, I'm just like, I don't have to understand it. I don't have to get it. It's them, it's theirs, it's their life. And if I can't handle that, then I'm sure that they don't want me in their life. And so I should have that same kind of perspective. But we need to start thinking about, are there any actual negatives to it? Like, are there any negative side effects to it that isn't just that goes beyond, oh, you should let people be who they are? Because even there are certain times when, like, if we did that for every single thing, people could leave somewhat disastrous and destructive, self-destructive lives.
Well, yeah, there's a point to everything. There's everything in moderation. Like, I think it becomes a problem if, you know, you're spending so much on your hobby or your nerd life that you can't spend things or money or time or energy on things that are actually important in life. I mean, like when I have the ability to buy something geeky, I'll go buy it, or I'll save for it and I'll go buy it. But, you know, I still pay my bills at the end of every month. I still work for a living. I still, when something is priority, it's priority. I don't let my nerdiness or my geek obsessions overrun my life.
Right. It's funny because you're absolutely right. And everything in moderation. I mean, you need, like, as long as it's healthy, it's okay. Because, like, right behind me, like, you can see right behind me, I have massive amounts of movies. And just, I have shelves and shelves and shelves of DVDs. When people come by, they're like, oh, wow, you're a film nerd. Like, that's pretty crazy that you know, sank so much cash into it. You must really have a passion for movies. And I go, yes, I do. If those were toys, if those were Star Trek figurines for every single one of those movies, people would probably go, wow, you have a problem.
Right.
What's the difference? Why is that different? Why is one more respected than the other?
Because I think one has less of a stigma connotation to it. I think that movies are kind of stigma neutral. There's something that everybody can access one way or the other. I've yet to meet a person who doesn't like movies, period. Mm-hmm. They may not necessarily be film buffs like the two of us, but they don't hate movies. Or they're not into movies. You know, it's something that everybody can grasp, everyone can understand, and it's just an accepted part of day-to-day life. When you start doing toys, that carries a much more of a stigma, and it's a much more associated with a niche part of society that, you know, some people do think have a problem. And certainly some media has not portrayed that culture very in the best light, shall we say. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, when they look at coverage of Comic-Con by the geeky outlets that you and I follow on the internet, but if you watch like the local news outlets, which I, you know, I've been in San Diego when Comic-Con's been on because I have family there, and I watch the local news. The goal is to find the schlubbiest, you know, most stereotypical nerd there and stick them on camera for the interview. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. It's nothing against that person, but they're looking for that stereotype to portray to the rest of the world.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's like people who have tons and tons of collectibles or who go to Comic-Con or spend all their time in geek avenues, then they must be deficient in some way. And I feel like we're definitely getting, we're on the pendulum swing back, where it's getting more acceptable. I mean, like, nerd chic is now a thing. And I think, we've talked about this several times before, but where, you know, we're getting to this information age and this technological age where those kids who were made fun of, who got the wedgies and the swirlies in high school, are now running companies and are billionaires. Mm-hmm. And those are the same type of people who go to Star Trek conventions, who dress up to have fun, to collect monstrous amounts of little bits of plastic that have Yoda's face on it. You know, right. Like these are the people who are titans of industry.
Right.
And I feel like that's, this pendulum is swinging back, and I'm wondering when it's going to start swinging the other way.
Well, I hope it doesn't swing the other way, but of course it probably will in a few years, because who knows what's going to happen. But if anything's going to cause it to swing the other way, it's not going to be it's not going to be the technology side of it, because we're enamored with technology and we want more and more better things. Mm-hmm. But if we're talking about pop culture, I guess the only way that it would swing the other way is what many think are happening now, although I wouldn't call it for sure, is, you know, the fatigue syndrome. Like when there's, you know, infinite number of Marvel movies, infinite number of DC films, infinite number of Star Wars films, and people, you know, quote unquote, grow tired of it. Maybe we see the shift away from it again. But I don't see that happening. And it's hard to argue that that's happening when something like, you know, Avengers Age of Ultron is now $1.3 billion. Jurassic World made $1 billion faster than any other movie ever since. It's hard to argue that that stuff is going to happen anytime soon.
I think we as Star Trek fans are very wary of fatigue syndrome. because of the golden age of the 90s
right.
with Star Trek. I mean, we were in a heyday and we had no idea. We had three Star Trek shows that existed in the 90s and several movies, some of them pretty awesome. And some people blame that fall in 2000, like in the early 2000s, some people blame that fall on fatigue, that we got too much Star Trek. Now, whether that's the case or not is up to debate, but I think it's something that we should be wary of. And I think that's why many people are saying, oh, let's, you know, like, hey, I love comic book films, but let's pace ourselves. Okay, let's not inundate the culture too much.
Right. It's hard to say because, like, for my money, and again, a huge bias here, but I think they've been doing pretty well with the comic book movies, at least Marvel has. As long as they keep changing up certain dynamics and or certain people, because for me, if you want my honest opinion with the Star Trek thing, I think the big problem was there wasn't enough people were around for too long, if that makes sense. Like the same production team was around for way too long. Mm. The same writing teams were around for way too long. Nothing changed. And I felt like that wasn't a problem when you got to DS9 because that was not, you know, if you know anything about Star Trek, Rick Berman didn't oversee DS9 as much as he was obsessed with like TNG and Voyager and later Enterprise. And I felt like they were able to get new writers in there and change up enough where it felt different and it felt new and it felt exciting. Mm-hmm. And as long as people are willing to hear different pitches and different ideas, and it doesn't have – there's not a rigid structure that they have to conform to. I mean, when you're having something like this, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, obviously there's a structure you have to conform to. But I don't think it's so that there's no room for creativity, period.
Right.
As long as there's some sort of creative spark, I think it can continue.
I never really thought of it that way, and I think that's an interesting take, and that's something that we should definitely talk about at a later date. One thing before we sign off, and I know that you're not a big video game guy,
right?
But I just bought an Xbox One, and it is being shipped to my house as we speak. And the thing with that is that we also have this. Like, the video game industry is a huge industry. Lots of money. Mm-hmm. Lots of money, like, goes into making the games, but lots of money is received for said games, sometimes more than most Hollywood pictures. And a lot of people don't know that.
Oh, yeah, we have conventions around it. We have lots of merchandise around it. We just had, what, E3?
Yeah, we just had E3, and we just got that new Batman game release, and that's the reason why I bought the Xbox One, is because I'm not a big gamer at all. Like, I have a handful of, like, I have like a dozen video games that I love to play, and I don't play that much. I mean, I really don't. Like, I'm lucky if I get like 1 or 2 hours in a week. And some people were saying, like, you know, why are you buying an Xbox One just for one game? And I said, I don't want to exist in a world where there is a Batman game that I cannot play. And all this made me remember a conversation that I had with a family member, and this family member, like, I was talking about a video game. I said I was really excited to play it, and he just kind of scoffs, you know, mm-hmm. that really pandering, just really self-righteous scoff.
Right.
And I go, what now? And he goes, he's like, I just don't understand how a successful 20-something professional would want to play video games. I'm like, why not? He's like, you're not a child. And I go, video games, most of the time, are built for me. Like, video games are built for the successful 20-something professionals. They're the ones that can afford all these new systems and all these games. Like, why do you think there's the rating system? Like, not everybody has a Nintendo and plays Mario.
But even, let's put that aside for a moment. Say they were marketing toward younger people, like teenagers. What law is it that you can't enjoy the same thing as long as, again, you put priority to the things that actually have, you know, big impacts in your life, you know, job, relationships, you know, the essentials. As long as you're paying attention to the essentials, then what unwritten law says that you can't enjoy video games?
That's true. Like, yeah, let's take it from that perspective. Like, that was my point earlier saying that it's like, yeah, most games are built like, do you think Call of Duty is built for a 6-year-old? No. Do 6-year-olds play it? Sure. Are they supposed to? No. You know,
I enjoy playing Mario Kart. That's not built for me.
I know, I understand that, but the point that I'm trying to say is,
no, I know.
is that this industry is marketed heavily towards people who are like me, and outsiders just don't understand that. Like, when they see a cartoon, they think, oh, that's, you know, they still think Saturday morning cartoons and, like, Garfield and stuff like that, where it's just like, oh, it's just like five-year-olds eating cereal in front of their TV. Like when they see something like King of the Hill, or if they look at anime, or if they look at, like, even, like, the DC animated universe, they're just like, oh, it's for children. No, this is, like, it's just animation. It's just a different form of art. And, like, you can have an adult message with cartoons and with animation. It's the same with video games. You can have an adult message with video games. But, like you said, take that away. I'm a successful professional 20-something. Why can't I spend an hour or two playing a kid's game? Why, like, I would play Zelda on 64, or I'll play Mario Kart on my Wii. Why can't I do that? Right. You know, like, if I pay the bills, what's the deal? Like, he has his own, like, this family member has his own hobbies. I mean, why is that better than me playing video games?
Why, you know? Why is that the more noble hobby?
I have no utter clue. And it's just, yeah, I think we need to just let people do what they want, as long as they are living healthy lives where they're paying their bills and they're having successful, you know, like, relationships outside of fictional characters, then yes, let them do what they want to do. Let them spend their money where they want to spend their money.
Exactly. If, as long as it's not hurting themselves or other people, you know, it's your life is my takeaway. And, you know, I'm 26 years old. When I'm 35 years old, I'll still be collecting Avengers and Star Trek stuff and, you know, stuff like that.
Absolutely. You know? And I will be doing the same 35, 45, 55, and hopefully 65 and beyond. And I guess that's our message here at the Nerd Party this week, is live and let live. Let people collect what they want to collect. Let them do what they want to do. Like, I was at the Chicago Botanic Gardens, and they have tons of weddings there. I was there today, and I was walking around with my wife, and I saw somebody in an anime costume. It was an anime-themed wedding, and I totally rolled my eyes. I was just like, oh, good Lord. But then at the same time, I was like, Tristan, what are you doing? This makes them happy. Obviously, it makes them happy, so why shouldn't you be happy for them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just funny.
And in even situations like that, it's like, as long as both parties who are getting married agree that this is what they wanted to do for their wedding. Now, it would be different if it was like the guy was just so much of a nerd that that's what he wanted to do and he conned the girl into it. Yes, then I would feel, then I would roll my eyes a little bit more. I'm like, okay, you're putting your hobby over prioritizing over your wife. But right. but if both of them wanted to do it, go for it.
More power to him. I mean, that's the thing, is that, like, we all have our bias and we all have stereotypes that we judge others by, but we need to catch ourselves as soon as we can.
So we will remain the non-judgmental nerd party, as long as, I mean, like, again, as long as you don't let things consume you.
Exactly. All right, well, thank you so much for listening. Please go to iTunes, find the Nerd Party at iTunes, and give us a review. If you give us a 5-star rating, we'll mention you on the podcast. Sorry, if you've given us one recently and we haven't mentioned you, please let us know and email us at contact@thenerdparty. And let us know what you think of what we talked about today, whether it's Inside and Out, Spider-Man, The Martian, or just being an adult geek and having collectibles, having toys, and spending your money where you want to. Share your story with us. You can also find us on our website at thenerdparty.com, where you can find all of our episodes, and you can also comment on our Tumblr page. And if you want to reach us individually, you can find me at The Insane Robin.
And you can find me at mhanson0207. Thank you so much for listening to The Nerd Party, and now you'll have to excuse me. There's an Avengers t-shirt on Amazon with my name on it.
Coming up next week,
Oscar nominee Robert Downey Jr. and an all-star cast, including Charles Grodin.
I'll fail. I'm telling you, I always fail.
Kara Sedgwick.
You're so afraid of being hurt. You're going to end up all alone.
Elizabeth Shue.
Anytime things get remotely serious, you start, I don't know, wiggling around.
Tom Sizemore.
I'm a professional, all right?
And Academy Award nominees David Paymer.
Let's go, dead people.
And Alfre Woodard.
I am so proud of you.
Tell you what, I'll give you a little preview.
Critics call it the best movie of the year.
I'm gonna walk like a man.
And the best comedy of the year. A magical fantasy. An absolute joy. Funny. Powerful. uplifting. Every moment is magic.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.